Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. The worldwide Catholic Church has been grappling with the tragedy, effects, and implications of clergy sex abuse scandals for years now. An institutional culture of silence allowed the scandals to persist in the shadows for decades. So has the Church made transformative change towards transparency? Well, this week, when asked directly by a reporter, Pope Francis finally publicly acknowledged another long-standing abuse crisis: nuns in orders around the world who've been sexually abused by clerics.
Ci sono stati sacerdoti e anche vescovi.
There are priests and even bishops who have done that, and I believe it still happens because something doesn't stop just because you have become aware of it.
Well, this hour on Point, the beginnings of another reckoning, the sexual abuse of nuns in the Catholic Church. And you can join us. What do you make of this newest revelation of a sexual abuse scandal in the Catholic Church? What is the impact of Pope Francis's recognizing the abuse of nuns as a global problem? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining us first today from Rome is Nicole Winfield, Vatican correspondent for the Associated Press. Last year, she investigated the sexual abuse of nuns by priests on a global scale. We have a link to her reporting at onpointradio.org. Nicole, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
So, Nicole, it was you who asked the question of Pope Francis earlier this week. You were on board the plane, right, the Vatican plane coming back from the United Arab Emirates. Can you first of all tell me the story of how this happened? I mean, you were at 30,000 feet and you just got an opportunity to speak with Pope Francis?
Not quite.
Okay.
This Pope has a wonderful tradition of fairly open-ended press conferences on the flights returning back to Rome after one of his foreign trips. And the way these press conferences unfold is that the various language groups of reporters who are on the plane decide among themselves what they pick, one or two questions that each language group is going to ask. And so after some discussion, the English language group, to which I belong, settled on a question that I had proposed, and that was, it concerned the sexual abuse of nuns. And I had reasoned with my colleagues that I thought it might be viable because just a few days prior to leaving Rome, the Vatican Women's Magazine had written an article about this issue in quite strong terms.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it was kind of fair game. I wasn't going to be coming out of nowhere with the question. So I thought it was relevant, current,
yeah,
and that the Pope might bite.
So how, when it was your turn to ask Pope Francis the question, how exactly did you phrase the question?
Well, I started out by very kind of, it was a bit long-winded, I admit, but I said, last week, the Vatican Women's Magazine denounced the sexual abuse of consecrated women in the church by men. And then I reminded him that back in November, the International Organization of Women Religious Congregations, the UISG, had issued a similarly public denunciation of the sexual abuse of sisters, urging the sisters to report this abuse to police and their superiors. And then I said, you know, we all know that this big meeting that's coming up at the end of February at the Vatican about abuse is focused on the abuse of minors. When might we expect some kind of a reckoning by the Holy See about this other issue that has been around for a while? So that was kind of the three-step process
okay,
the question.
Okay. Well, I asked how you phrased it because, his answer clearly, or the candor of his answer, is what made worldwide news. And here, in part, is how Pope Francis answered Nicole Winfield's question.
Ci sono stati sacerdoti e anche vescovi.
There are priests and even bishops who have done that, and I believe it still happens because something doesn't stop just because you have become aware of it.
Si deve fare qualcosa di più? Sì.
Should something more be done? Yes. Is there the will? Yes. But it is a path that we already began.
So that's part of Pope Francis's answer about whether or not priests and clerics have sexually abused nuns in the Catholic Church. And so, Nicole, when he engaged with your question, what was your first reaction?
I was happy, obviously.
Yes, of course.
I wasn't sure that he would go for it. As soon as I heard him acknowledge it, it would have been terrible if he didn't acknowledge it because it's so present. But I think the way he acknowledged it, it was thoughtful. And I knew immediately that the mere acknowledgement of the problem, also saying that this is not just priests, but also bishops who have done this, I knew that that was going to be a headline.
Right. Well, you know,
he also committed to doing more, realizing that there was more that needed to be done and that he personally committed himself to doing more. So I thought that was also significant that now he's put himself out there.
Yeah. So we'll talk more about that. And, you know, and you heard in that clip him, the Pope saying it is a path we've already begun about doing something. And we'll discuss that more in detail in just a minute. But Nicole, I mean, last year you did have this tremendous reporting about the abuse that nuns have suffered in multiple countries around the world. Can you tell us specifically what are we talking about? What's the scale of this abuse and what have happened to some of these nuns been experiencing?
The scale is the big unknown. No one, at least outside the Vatican, has any idea how big a problem this is. It is, one has to assume that it is a very underreported crime because there is a lot of shame and a whole host of reasons why a nun who is in a situation like this might not even report it to her own superior. So I don't know that, you know, it would be very difficult to come up with numbers. And in terms of the effects, though, in some of the reports that have been done, you see very clearly what some of the repercussions are against sisters who have spoken out. There's the most present case now in India, where a nun has gone to police to denounce what she says is a repeated rape by her bishop. She has been ostracized by her own congregation. The congregation has been divided. She's got people who support her, people who say she's lying, even within her own congregation. So the act of denouncing this comes with, you know, tremendous cost. You risk your own livelihood. You risk your vocation. In the case in Chile, a small congregation of nuns reported that the nuns were thrown out of the order after they complained to their superior.
Wow.
So there are real repercussions for speaking out. Well, at least there have been.
So the abuse is, you know, there's sexual abuse, there's rape, as you talked about. There are even cases in which I'm reading here that some nuns have been made pregnant and then went on to have abortions. And the Women Church World, that women's magazine from the Vatican that you had talked about a couple of minutes ago, they really there's a particularly just gripping paragraph where they write about this. They say the abuse of women results in procreation, and so it is at the origin of the scandal of imposed abortions and children not recognized by priests. So it's like a double sin there, if I can use the language of the church.
Absolutely. I think and the abortion aspect is also something that has been known now for decades, because that was in some of the original reporting on this back in the 90s in reference to Africa. So yes, it is a double sin. I think that's the term. It's a sexual violation and then an added grave sin of of an abortion.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, and just to be clear, sin in terms of the eyes and views of the Vatican and the Catholic Church, we are not passing any judgment on abortion as a sin here. Not at all. I was just using sort of the language of the
Good
Church
point.
There. That is I do
you,
clearly yes. want to say that we are not making any judgments on abortion or access to abortion right now. But the point is that this is what has happened to nuns around the world here. So Nicole, stand by for just one second here. That's Nicole Winfield, who is speaking to us from Rome today. She is the Vatican correspondent for the Associated Press. And I want to bring into the conversation Sister Kathleen Bryant. She is joining us from NPR West in Culver City, California today. She is a nun with the Religious Sisters of Charity. She entered the Catholic Church in 1967. She's helped create a training module for nuns on sexual abuse by priests. She's also an activist with the U.S. Catholic Sisters Against Human Trafficking. Sister Kathleen Bryant, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Meghna.
So first of all, let me hear from you. I mean, you've been obviously active and aware in trying to fight this problem within the Catholic Church about the abuse of nuns for some time. So when you heard that the Pope publicly acknowledged the problem this week, what was your first response to that?
I was really grateful. And I was relieved because we hear stories through the grapevine, and I've lived in some different countries, and there's been such a culture of power and silence. And I was thinking of driving over here this morning on behalf of a sister somewhere in a country in the world who is enmeshed in this, can't get out, afraid to speak up. And especially in countries where the culture gives such incredible reverence to the priest or the bishop, there's more likelihood of some abuse because there's such a loyalty and a secrecy there. So I was grateful. And I love that Pope Francis admits it. He's honest. He says we need to do more. But even more than that, that statement that the Superiors General came out with last year was very bold and said they condemned it. And there are leaders of all sisters all over the world. So it's our time.
Mm. Well, Sister Kathleen Bryant, stand by for just a moment. And Nicole Winfield in Rome, hang on for just a second. We are talking about the possibility of yet another reckoning, or the beginnings of another reckoning in the Catholic Church, this time about what seems to be the pervasive abuse of nuns by priests and clerics around the world. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about another reckoning in the Catholic Church, this time about the abuse of nuns by priests and clerics around the world. This week, Pope Francis, for the first time, publicly and openly acknowledged that abuse exists. He did so a little earlier this week. We heard the first part of his comments before the break, but let's play a little bit more about what the Pope said when he was asked about the sexual abuse of nuns. Here's the Pope with an English voiceover. He called the sexual violence against women a broader cultural issue as well.
I dare say that humanity has not yet matured. Women are treated as second class. It is a cultural problem. There are even countries where mistreatment of women reaches the point of femicide.
That's Pope Francis earlier this week. I'm joined today by Nicole Winfield. She's Vatican correspondent for the Associated Press. She has reported extensively about this issue of the abuse of nuns in the church. We have a link to her reporting at onpointradio.org. And she is the reporter who asked Pope Francis the question that elicited these responses earlier this week. We're also joined by Sister Kathleen Bryant. She is a nun with the Religious Sisters of Charity. She helped create a training module for nuns on sexual on the sexual abuse by priests. And Sister Kathleen, you were saying before the break that now is your time, meaning the time for sisters to be heard. And I'm just wondering, you know, the church has been forced to publicly grapple with a sexual abuse crisis of minors for so many years now, that for people paying attention or within the church, perhaps it's not news that nuns have also suffered at the hands of some clerics or even bishops. But why do you think broader awareness of what's been happening to nuns hasn't come until relatively recently?
There's a culture of secrecy. And, you know, the church has been described as a dysfunctional family. So the loyalties to the family and the fear of reprisal from a bishop or a superior, you know, I think it's an evolution of consciousness in women all over the world that it's time to use our voices and it's time to speak up. And so I think it's a gradual evolution. We see it in the Me Too movement. This is like the Me Too movement for Catholic sisters. Mm-hmm. So I think part of our spiritual development is finding our voices and learning to use them.
Yeah.
And it takes practice. And it's scary.
Well, you created this training module for nuns about what to do, I guess, regarding sexual abuse by priests. When did you first create that?
Now, that, to be fair, I have to give credit to Sister Rose, the daughter of St. Paul's. Rose Bacotti really put it together.
Okay.
But she interviewed a couple of us. And I'm on our international formation team. So when we train our young sisters now, we are trying to be very strong about, you know, in decades ago, it was about being obedient and submissive and respectful. Now we're trying to say, you have a voice. You need to use your voice. We talk about boundaries. We talk about being safe and not putting our young sisters in positions where they'd be alone with somebody or not have a well-defined job description. So that's where I'm part of it, is we need to train young women in the world, not just sisters.
Uh-huh.
There's so many vulnerable adults working in the church, women in the church, to be able to use their voices to speak out. So that's the formation.
I see.
Is, you know, virtue is a strength. And virtue before was like, oh, be humble, keep silence. But that's not what we need now.
Right. And so that's what that's how you're training young sisters now. But I mean, you've been in the Religious Sisters of Charity for quite some time. I mean, what was it like in your first years as a new nun?
Well, I entered in 1967. And I remember there was a culture of accepting what you were told to do, being obedient, not asking questions. But I know in a lot of these situations with these sisters who are so vulnerable, they might have grown up in a culture where in their pedagogy, you don't ask questions. At least in the U.S., you know, if you're in a classroom, you can raise your hand.
Mm.
And maybe you'll say, I don't agree with this. But some of these sisters maybe reached a high school education only or less. And so we were trained to be submissive and obedient in the early days. I entered in 1967. But there are still cultures where that is part of the process of formation and training.
Right. Well, so Nicole Winfield in Rome, let me turn back to you because that's making me think of the piece of sound that we just played a few minutes ago from the Pope himself saying he also says humanity has not yet matured, that it's a cultural problem how women are treated in many places. But on the other hand, I mean, to me and perhaps to some listeners out there, once again, this is smacks at what can be seen as the fundamental hypocrisy of how the church has handled these abuse crises, right? Because, you know, as a spiritual body, the church is supposed to protect the most vulnerable and weakest amongst us. So what exactly has the church been doing or is the church doing now to deal with the problem of nuns being abused?
Well, the response from the Pope implied that they were dealing with it on a case-by-case basis, and he said that there had been priests who had been suspended, sent away, but I guess you have to go back to, you can't punish unless you get a complaint. So if there has not been the willingness to speak out and to go to your superior or for the superior to then confront the bishop, it's possible that these complaints never really get very far if they're ever made at all. And so can you fault the Holy See for not doing anything if these complaints aren't reaching them in vast numbers? I don't know. one has to assume that since, you know, this has been there and there have been published reports since the 1990s, that it's a fairly well-documented phenomenon. So you would like to hope that more action had been taken.
Yeah.
And if you speak to people who are engaged in this in more of an academic perspective, they throw up their hands and say they haven't done anything or they've done very little, and they certainly haven't addressed it in any systematic or universal way.
Right. Well, can I just turn back to Sister Kathleen here for a second? Because, hearing that perhaps these cases of abuse have been dealt with on a case-by-case basis and that some priests have been suspended or sent away, I mean, that sounds very familiar in terms of how the church for many years handled the abuse of minors to little effect.
Right. It's a systemic issue. So, I mean, if we're going to do something about this, there's that upcoming meeting in Rome, February 22nd. Why not include vulnerable adults in that? Like vulnerable sisters, not just minors. And I think more women have to be in these decision-making bodies and in authority in the Catholic Church. They should do an investigation and go to these countries in South America and Asia and Africa and India and have women religious on the ground from their own cultures interviewing to get the stories, because it's systemic. I don't think they'll trust somebody coming from Rome that's a male that's on some commission, but I do think that in the sisterhood, we need to build up trust in order to get those stories out.
Mm.
Like Nicole said, I mean, there might be case by case, but that's not going to help with the systemic abuse.
Right. Well, Sister Kathleen Bryant and Nicole Winfield, hang on here for a second because I want to bring in a couple of callers. Let's go to Linda, who's calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi. I want to be very specific about the complaints do not reach them. Yes, this is a cultural issue. This has been a church issue for a very, very long time. 20 years ago, when I was visiting friends in Catania in Sicily, they were giving me the tour of the historic area, and there was a beautiful old building along with many others. And my friend casually explained, this is the place where the women who have been impregnated by priests go to have their babies.
Huh.
Maybe they were nuns, maybe they were girlfriends. This is where the children were raised. That building was a couple of hundred years old. The church knows it's got a problem. It's been handling the problem for a very, very long time. Maybe in other major cities around the world, there are similar institutions. That would not surprise me. This can't be just capturing the institution and the hierarchy of the church suddenly because some very brave women have stepped up and said something. They've had answers. They've been handling it.
Yeah. Well, Linda, thank you so much for your call. Nicole Winfield, would you like to respond to Linda's story there?
I absolutely agree. I mean, that this has been around and that they've known about it is without doubt. I don't know the scope of things that actually reach the congregation for the evangelism, you know, the congregation that handles mission territory would be the ones who would receive complaints coming from Africa, Asia. I have no concept of what their archive might look like. It might be huge. Congregation for Religious Orders, they might have a huge archive. One would hope that these superiors in congregations around the world are forwarding these complaints. But I have to say, the few people who I've spoken to, the superiors haven't done anything with the information. If a nun makes a complaint to her superior, that superior, especially if she's in a diocesan order, meaning she's pretty much entirely dependent on her local bishop for the congregation's very existence.
Uh-huh.
How is she gonna go up against that bishop and say, you know what, one of your priests just got my sister pregnant?
Right.
Now, she has interests that might dissuade her from taking it up the chain of command. Am I giving the Holy See too much credit and the benefit of the doubt? Yes, but I also have heard that, and as we've seen in India, the superior of this woman making the complaint against the bishop has sided with the bishop.
Yeah. So
we
So I just want to turn back to Sister Kathleen Bryant there. Sister Kathleen, can you give us more insight into what Nicole was just saying about the relationship between the orders and the diocese in which these orders are operating? Like, I mean, I hear Nicole really talking about how, you know, that people, nuns, just may be afraid to take their complaints up the rank by virtue of just the relationship on the ground.
I agree with Nicole. In fact, I mean, the stories that I've heard in some of the countries, I know they haven't gone up to the different levels. But, you know, there's difference in the Catholic Church. There are orders of sisters that were communities that were started that they're pontifical and they're international, or they stand in their own right. But there are bishops who found their own religious communities, and then they have total power over that community in their diocese. And that's where I think most of those stories will come from. Not all of them, but there has to be some kind of oversight by women, because they control their finances, they control their lifestyle, their ministries. And so let's say a sister goes to a superior in one of the diocesan orders and makes a complaint. He could easily say, I don't want you here anymore, or I'm dissolving your community, or I'm taking away your school that we built up, or anything like that. So the power, it rests too heavily with the male superior, who's for all purposes the diocesan bishop. Mm. I think they need to change canon law and say, let women found communities of women as part of our history. Yeah. Because I agree with Nicole, all those complaints are not going up to the top.
Yeah. Sister Kathleen and Nicole Winfield, hang on here for a second, because I want to welcome Susan Reynolds into the conversation. She's joining us from Atlanta, Georgia. She's a professor of Catholic Studies at Emory University's Candler School of Theology. And she was the lead author of an open letter by Catholic theologians, parishioners, lay leaders, and more, calling on U.S. bishops to offer their resignation in the wake of the Pennsylvania grand jury report last year that came out about the sexual abuse of minors, and that happened last year. Susan Reynolds, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Meghna.
Okay, so there's a lot to dig into here. You've been hearing both Sister Kathleen Bryant and Nicole Winfield sort of talking about the long history of the abuse of nuns that has been known about within the church. But I'm really interested to hear your take on what Sister Kathleen said about the power imbalance between the orders and the diocese in which they're operating, and how that may be one of the main obstacles right now to even getting information to the Vatican about the scale of the abuse problem for nuns.
I think that insight is absolutely correct. So much of the abuse crisis in the global church, whether we're talking about the abuse of minors, whether we're talking about the abuse of women religious, comes down to the cultural issue of clericalism, cultural as in the culture of the Catholic Church, globally speaking. Of course, this manifests itself differently globally based on local cultures, as has sort of been explicated by your guests. But, you know, when we're talking about clericalism, we're talking about a form of idolatry, a distorted vision of the relationship of power among lay and ordained persons, in which those who are ordained are regarded and come to regard themselves as above and apart, as holier, as purer, as closer to God, as worthy of protection, as elite. And the result, of course, is a relationship of domination that leads to abuse in many forms, both obvious and insidious. I mean, you see this domination in many of these reports from sisters all over the world. These women feel trapped. You know, they couldn't say no. They're often abused repeatedly. They're forced to have abortions when they become pregnant. They're treated as objects. They're dehumanized. I think it's important to note, too, your guest brought up sort of the resonances with the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. We can mirror this moment in the church with what's sort of become known in broader social discourse as toxic masculinity, right? This view of maleness and power that doesn't only result in the abuse of lay people, but also warps priests' own humanity and self-understanding. It robs them of the possibility of deep and healthy and life-giving relationships with other people. You know, we see this in the fact that these women who've been abused are made to feel like, in coming forward, that they're the abusers of the priests of the church, that yeah. In speaking the truth, they're somehow doing harm to the church that they love and that they serve. It's really a form of manipulation.
Well, so, I mean, we've got a minute to go before we have to take a quick break here. But Professor Reynolds, I mean, we've had this discussion before about how, I mean, the church is built, as I said at the very top of this hour, on this edifice of power that can be used for great good, but also great harm. And so if we're going to overturn that edifice of power and dismantle clericalism, as you've spoken so eloquently about for years, how does that happen? I mean, Sister Kathleen was talking about even making minor changes to canonical law so that women can found communities of women. At this point in time, that one thing in and of itself seems to be a major mountain to climb.
It does. I think what we need to do is really re-envision creatively the way in which power is structured and operates in the church. Lay people need a voice. Women need a voice, right? So we don't have to go to the newspapers and sign open letters in order to have our voice heard by anyone.
Well, Susan Reynolds and Sister Kathleen Bryant and Nicole Winfield in Rome, stand by for a moment. Just got to take a very quick break. We're talking about yet another reckoning in the Catholic Church, this time about the abuse of nuns by priests and bishops. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about another reckoning in the Catholic Church, this time about nuns who've been abused by priests and clerics. Earlier this week, Pope Francis, for the first time, publicly acknowledged that this has been going on for some time. We're joined today by Nicole Winfield. She's Vatican correspondent for the Associated Press. Sister Kathleen Bryant joins us. She's a Catholic nun with the Religious Sisters of Charity. And Susan Reynolds is also with us as well. She's professor of Catholic Studies at Emory University. And I just want to play a little bit of tape here, a story from another nun who has been abused. Doris Wagner was sexually assaulted as a nun in Germany. She shared her personal story at the Voices of Faith event called Overcoming Silence, Women Voices in the Abuse Crisis. This happened in December 2018.
5 years after I had joined, and only some months after I had solemnly professed vows here in Rome, the male superior of the house came into my room and raped me. And the only thing I was able to say was, "You are not allowed to do this." But obviously it didn't help at all. And instantly I knew whosoever I would ever speak about this in the community would blame me and not him. And so I kept silent.
That's Doris Wagner, who was assaulted as a Catholic nun in Germany. Let's go to Mary, who's calling from Cleveland, Ohio. Mary, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. What I wanted to share was that I am a religious sister, and yes, we've known about this for a long time. Some years back, probably 15, 20 years back, our mother superior had an opportunity to speak face-to-face with Pope John Paul II, and she brought up the situation of are women in Africa, in our congregation and in general, being abused by priests. She asked him to do something about this. And the very next day, the newspapers in Rome carried a story that she had said to Pope John Paul II that she wanted women to be priests, which was a lie. It was a punishment to her mm-hmm. for bringing this up. So yes, John Paul II knew about this. People knew about this long ago. I also live with an Indian sister, and I know a number of Indian sisters who, yes, they just don't talk about this kind of thing. Yeah. That culture of silence is very, very real.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for your call and for sharing your story. Nicole Winfield in Rome, let me turn back to you, because you heard Mary say that that John Paul II knew about this problem. Pope Francis, earlier this week, I believe he also talked about how Benedict knew as well, but he was singing Benedict's praises in terms of how the previous pope might have dealt with this issue of abuse against nuns. Can you tell us more about that?
Right. Francis made reference to a case of a small order in France. He didn't name it at the time, but we went back to the spokesman and asked him to ask the Pope what he was referring to. And it's the community of Saint-Jean, which is one of these newer religious congregations. It had a female branch, a male branch. Apparently, in 2013, the founder died in 2006. In 2013, the new prior admitted that there had been something sexual involving the founder and some of the female members of the community, but it really didn't go any farther than that. There was a governance crisis in the order. An offshoot branch formed in Spain, and apparently Benedict suppressed that order. He dissolved it. And so Francis used that case to show that the Vatican has been engaged in this and has taken action. It was kind of an odd example to bring up, because it implied that the nuns were in somehow to blame, you know, that the congregation was dissolved. Apparently it was dissolved because there were a lot of other problems. But the fundamentals of it was that there was a founder of a congregation who, after he died, there was an admission, finally, that yes, there had been some cases of what at the time they called, you know, violations of his vow of chastity.
Yeah.
The way Francis described it, it was quite a bit more than that.
But, well, and as you said, Nicole, I mean, it seems to be an odd example to point to, because the outcome was that the order of nuns was dissolved, perhaps, rather than getting to the deeper problem that there was abuse going on. But okay, so this vow of chastity, let's deal with this directly, because so many comments are coming in online that about the celibacy vow here. For example, we have Karen, who's saying, the Pope has acknowledged pedophilia and sexual abuse are problems in the church, so fix the problem. Get rid of celibacy. Stefanos Karavas says, you don't see sex scandals of this scale afflicting religious denominations where celibacy is not required of their clergy. Someone calling themselves Honesty says, I'm not Catholic, but I wonder why Catholicism doesn't just end its celibacy edict. David Schmidt says, to truly address the Catholic Church shortcomings, the church must revamp some of its most closely held tenets, allow priests to be married, allow women to become priests, and turn over to civil authorities criminal misdeeds. Anything less will not turn the church around. So Sister Kathleen Bryant, engage with us on this. So, over and over again through the many years, people have repeatedly asked, both lay people and people from outside the church, why not grapple with this fundamental edict that they see as having in part driven the crisis?
Magna, you know, I do human trafficking education and work, and I work with survivors. And to be honest, I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think that's a simplistic solution. I think it has more to do with the power dynamics and patriarchy. But I also know that in my work with survivors, that there's high incidence of predators and sexual slavery among married men. I mean, it's not something just that involves people that aren't married or celibate. So I think sometimes, I think some people are called to chastity and some aren't. And I know in the Catholic Church for hundreds of years, we had married clergy. And even some of our recognized, like branches of Catholic priests, they come back, they're married. So I do think there's room to look at married clergy, but I do not think that will solve the problem. I think it's deeper. I think it's about clericalism and power and the patriarchy. So I don't think that's the answer. But I do think that there's also a way to healthily explore married clergy like we had in the early years of the church.
So Sister Kathleen, forgive me, but when you say the patriarchy, the church is one of the greatest global embodiments of patriarchy. And I say this as a person who is not a member of the church. Okay, so push back on me if you'd like. But okay, every pope since the founding, you know, since St. Paul has been a man. It doesn't seem to be an institution that is anything other than one built on the advancement of quote-unquote patriarchy.
You're right, Magna. That's why we keep saying this is our time. This is an evolution. Pope Francis is the first pope that began a commission. I listened to a woman the other day, 50-50, 50% women, 50% men. So it's time for us to share leadership and authority in the Catholic Church, starting with commissions. And I agree with you, but this is the part of the problem. I don't think it's just chastity or celibacy, because we're all called to chastity. I really don't think, I think that's a simplistic solution. I think the patriarchy, the power, and not involving women equally. Because, you know, our lives as Catholic sisters are centered on Jesus, not on the Vatican. And so Jesus is the model for us of who empowered women and told them to stand up when they were bent over and go tell my brothers the good news and sent them out with the word. So, you know, that's the problem, is this nucleus. And Pope Francis keeps speaking out against clericalism. And some of the quotes used today on the program, he's challenging entitlement all the time.
Yeah. Well, Susan Reynolds, let me turn back to you, because I want to hear your view, your thoughts on this this celibacy question that comes up again and again.
Yeah, I think Sister Kathleen is right on. You know, I think, again, drawing parallels to conversations about toxic masculinity in broader society, getting married doesn't cure men of misogyny, right? If anything, it simply shifts the target of their abuse to their spouse. So it's simple. It's too simple to say, well, all of this has happened because priests can't get married. It's also incorrect to say that there aren't sex scandals in other denominations where clergy can be married. There have been numerous cases, even just within the past several months, of major heads of mega churches and other Protestant denominations resigning in the midst of sex scandals. But I think, again, that's not to discount the magnitude of what's going on here. I think it's just to say, simply saying, oh, well, just let clergy get married. It's too simple of a solution, right? I know many, many men and women who have led holy celibate lives. I do think it's important, though, to evaluate, let's say, how celibacy is being taught, so to speak, as these men are in formation, right? Celibacy doesn't mean repressing your sexuality or pretending that you're no longer an embodied human being or that sex is some dirty and taboo thing, right? Celibacy is about ordering one's sexuality and all the other goods of one's life to the greater glory of God in the particular way that one's vocation invites them to do that. So I think it's larger than that. It's also important to note, though, that, you know, there are certain cultural factors that come into play, and others have noted this, that in certain contexts, particularly in non-Western contexts, in some of these cases out of Uganda, for example, priestly celibacy sits uneasily with these sort of deeply rooted cultural traditions and expectations that men be married, sometimes polygamously, and bear lots and lots of children. Uh-huh. So I think Sister Kathleen is exactly right. I think it's an issue worth looking at.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Todd, who's calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Todd, you're on the air.
Hi, Magna. Thanks for taking my call. I think there's a deep, deep structural sin in the church that the church, institutional church, isn't dealing with. And your speakers have touched on it. Clericalism is one manifestation of that structural sin. And I think it fundamentally needs to be challenged by Catholic teaching itself. So you have the principle of subsidiarity, participatory justice, that isn't used and recognized in the church. So I just very briefly propose three ways to address this structural sin. First of all, lay people need a voice and they need power in the church. Secondly, there needs to be bishop accountability by lay boards and other bishops that call bishops out. And then thirdly, I think there need to be women priests, bishops, and cardinals to exercise that authority institutionally. So thank you very much.
And Todd, thank you for your call. Nicole Winfield, let me turn back to you. You're there in Rome, the Vatican correspondent for the Associated Press. Can you give us a little bit of insight into what more is happening at the Vatican regarding the issue of the abuse of nuns? Because I'm also reading here that a top official in the Vatican office that actually handles sexual abuse allegations had to resign last month after a former nun accused him of making sexual advances during confession.
Yes, well, you commentary that you played from the Voices of Faith event was a former sister from a German congregation who not only had accused the superior of raping her, but in a second accusation accused a German priest of an unwanted advance during confession. That she says that she denounced to her superior and nothing really came of it. And so she repeated this accusation at this Voices of Faith event back in November. And this priest now, up until very recently, he worked in the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith. He was on the doctrinal side. That congregation has kind of got two sides to it. One handles discipline, which are the abuse cases that are processed there, and then there's the doctrine side, which handles, you know, the guardian of orthodoxy in the Catholic Church. I believe he was on the doctrine side, mm-hmm. but he wasn't actually handling abuse cases. But he, the Vatican announced, I guess at the end of last month, that he had resigned. He professes his innocence, and he has reserved the right for civil litigation. So he firmly denies this charge, but he resigned to spare the congregation from any further attention because it obviously was it was a scandal. Right.
You have, right.
Someone who's working in the Vatican, and this allegation is out there.
I see. Well, Sister Kathleen Bryant and Nicole Winfield and Susan Reynolds, we just have 2 minutes left here. And so, Sister Kathleen, let me turn back to you because we've talked about these big issues in the church, about power structures, about clericalism, about, you know, your call for certain canonical laws to be changed. I mean, these are enormous long-term efforts that have to go on within the church. I'm wondering if there's something also more concrete or short-term that you'd like to see, a separate commission to deal with the abuse of nuns specifically or anything like that that might help achieve some short-term change.
Like I mentioned earlier, Meghna, I think a commission of women interviewing women from their own culture on the ground would be good to investigate and to find out the stories. But could I also say quickly, there are sisters who are using their voice. They're not all afraid. And there are priests and bishops living with integrity. I don't want to paint a picture that, you know, there aren't nuns that can't speak out now.
Mm-hmm.
I think we just to qualify that.
Okay. And so, Susan Reynolds, we've got about a minute left here to go. Last thought from you.
I want to lift up, I guess, how much of the heavy lifting in the church religious sisters do globally. You know, they run schools and hospitals. They devote their lives to serving the poor and the unseen throughout the world. And so it's so deeply ironic that it's often their labor and their experiences of trauma that go disregarded and unseen by the church, particularly in certain contexts. So, I think I agree with Sister Kathleen. We need to create structures so that women can be heard and women can be believed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that leadership has to come from other women.
Well, Susan Reynolds, joining us today from Atlanta, is professor of Catholic Studies at Emory University's Candler School of Theology. Professor Reynolds, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Sister Kathleen Bryant with us from Culver City, California at NPR West, a Catholic nun with the Religious Sisters of Charity. She's been in the order since 1967. Sister Kathleen Bryant, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Magna.
And Nicole Winfield, Vatican correspondent for the Associated Press. She is the reporter who asked Pope Francis about his view of the abuse of nuns in the Catholic Church that got all of this started this week. Nicole, thank you so very much for joining us and for your reporting.
Having me.
And we've got links to Nicole's reporting at onpointradio.org, so definitely check it out. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.